You are listening to the Experience Points podcast for the week of January 15th, 2020. 2019 is behind us. New year, new me, baby.
New year, new games.
New year, new games.
Welcome back, everybody. This is the Experience Points podcast. My name is Scott Juster.
And I'm George Alboy.
We are the co-creators of ExperiencePoints.net. It is a serious but not humorless conversation about video games, and the sun is dawning.
It has risen.
On a
praise
new year.
Praise the sun, brother.
Actually, no, that's not a sun. That's a giant comet called forth from Sephiroth. Uh-oh, it's Final Fantasy VII time.
Well, that got delayed, actually. Did you see the news?
No!
And only by like a month, so it's
okay,
fine.
That's fine. Yeah. This episode is all about the releases that we know of, the 2020 releases that are documented or at least committed to for the year. We're going to talk about some of the games that are on the calendar and some of the games that we are looking forward to playing, yes. Or maybe some of the games that we are dreading playing, going back to my initial comment.
That's true. I didn't think, you know what, Diablo 4, it's the one that didn't appear on my list, but I'm going to play it. I'm not excited for it.
Yeah, so we're just going to talk about a handful of games that we know are coming out and talk about what we're looking forward to, make a few predictions about what we think will catch our attention this year, and then just map out the year a little bit.
Yes, indeed.
I feel like a lot of this stuff actually is just kind of generically 2020, that there's not a whole bunch of solid dates yet. Yes. Is that kind of your sense of it?
That is also my sense. I think we'll learn a lot more probably in March when more games are going to be announced in that early spring push. We'll definitely know more by E3, and then everything will be delayed again, and so we'll get another update, come October?
I mean, I'll just launch into it. I think one of the trends this year is we're going to see some pretty big, high-profile, cross-platform, cross-generational games.
Interesting. Cross-platform, even though we're getting new consoles, do you think?
I mean, I think, for whatever reason, it feels like the dam has broken on that stuff.
Right.
And anything that is made for either Sony or Microsoft, it seems like they're just having a harder and harder time justifying keeping player bases separate. I mean, even Call of Duty and all that stuff. I mean, it just seems like we're kind of past that, and now the next step is how much of this stuff exists exclusively on a platform and even more granularly exclusively on a new gen platform versus, you know, the current gen.
I think that's an interesting idea because at this point we all know it's possible, you know, like we have it, we've gotten it. Yep. So there's not a whole lot of excuses besides it just not being consumer friendly.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, there's going to be a few. I mean, obviously, there's going to be the annual Call of Duty. There's going to be a few other big multiplayer games. So it just seems like they've, I don't know, for whatever reason, people have made that leap. But I guess we'll have to see. The other thing, too, is, I mean, I don't know. I'm looking at some of these games like, you know, Ghosts of Tsushima or you know, Halo or whatever. I just can't see them not making those available on the new consoles in some way, shape, or form.
So in terms of compatibility, backwards compatibility.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I mean, I think that is absolutely the case. We're still going to get a lot of games that are on both consoles. In terms of crossplay, I don't think that we're past timed exclusivity. I don't think that's going away anytime soon. I think that just is the natural next step for a lot of these.
Yeah. So what do you think? What's on your list for what you are excited about?
Well, I'm also hoping this is the year of VR. You know, finally. After all these years.
10
maybe
years
this
later.
Year. No, that's definitely a 2021 thing. Okay. All right, man. I have a surprisingly large list.
Yeah.
And it's funny because I talked in our 2019 end of the year conversations that I was like, there's not that many great games. If any of these are half as good as I hope they'll be, we're going to have a lot of great games next year.
Totally.
I'm going to start off. God, where do I start off? Okay, you know what? I'll start off with the controversial pick. Cyberpunk 2077.
So glad. I wanted to talk about this one too.
So I also have a first time on the podcast confession, everyone. But I have been playing The Witcher 3 Wild Hunt, and I like it.
Oh, snap.
Oh, my God. Woo. Here's the thing. I started playing Witcher 3 after I watched the first episode of the Witcher TV show, and I was like, you know what? Everyone's been giving this game so much praise over the years. You and I are naysayers. I'll give it one more shot. And I am probably like a good 25 hours, 30 hours into The Witcher 3. I am really enjoying it. I don't think we were wrong in our criticism of the game. It's overblown, and I think especially in those early few hours, it's not a great first come experience. But what I can say after putting enough hours in is this feels like a game whose side stories and general world building have been so thoroughly well thought out that I am now excited for Cyberpunk in a way that I was not before repicking it. Because if Cyberpunk 2077 is still paying attention to the side quests and the stories there, I can be absolutely hooked and interested, especially if it's respectful of just the general sci-fi genre and isn't just, you know, like a clumsy attempt at it.
Yeah.
I don't have a ton of faith in CDP's marketing team because of some of the ways that they've talked about the game. But
yeah.
I don't know, man. If the core writers are there, I think it's something I'm newly excited about.
I mean, I'm excited for it because I just think, mechanically speaking, I think it's an easier sell for me because it doesn't look like it relies as much on melee. It doesn't look like there's as many things around, oh, I have to oil my sword and drink this tonic. And it seems like, I don't know. Like, it just seems like there are ways that structurally the cyberpunk genre can downplay some of the things that I dislike about The Witcher and let me focus on the things that I think are good about their games, which is, to your point, the world itself.
Yep.
And I don't know. It's been a while since we've gotten a big AAA cyberpunk style world.
Yeah.
And so I think that stuff looks exciting. I mean, that I want to like this game, and it's coming out pretty soon. I mean, this is like an April
thing. How can you not be excited?
I mean, it just feels also like an order of magnitude more, I don't know how to describe it. I mean, even no matter how, The Witcher 3 is obviously a huge game and cost a bunch of money to make and is hugely technically impressive, but Cyberpunk for some reason to me feels, The Witcher always seemed a little bit like you had to go into someone's basement to play it. whereas Cyberpunk seems more, I don't know, for whatever reason, it just seems more polished.
Yeah.
And I hope that's the case. I mean, I only know what I've seen. I haven't played any previews or anything, but I am hopeful for the game.
Cool. All right. How about you?
Okay. Let's, okay. So I think I'm still every once in a while chipping away at Pokemon and I'm,
yeah, same.
I think it's the right way of playing it. And I'm wondering if Animal Crossing will be that sort of game for me this year.
Yeah.
Because Animal Crossing comes out pretty soon. It's a end of March release, I think, because it had gotten delayed from 2019. Yeah. And
I've never played an Animal Crossing game either.
I mean, yeah, I've messed around with it, but never. I mean, Animal Crossing seems to be a way of life.
Yes, that's true.
And so I think, and especially,
well, once you're under Tom Nook's thumb, you know, you're required to come back.
I mean, once you have that mortgage, you are locked in. I mean, you got to go get those bells. You got to go fish or whatever you do in those games. I mean, I think the format, the Switch format, is uniquely positioned to be great because the whole point of that original Animal Crossing game was that there was real time events that were mapped out to the calendar, and like time of day mattered and day of the week mattered, and so you can integrate it even more into your life in this case, and it's kind of the perfect format for this type of game.
I hope it has Ring Fit Adventure functionality. You know, how cool would that be if your character could get jacked on Animal Crossing?
Or if you don't do it and all of a sudden your character's all roly-poly just rolling around the field.
All right, that's a good one. Let's see. Segway. Here's a game also about jacked dudes, and that's Boyfriend Dungeon. Boyfriend Dungeon is a game that is essentially that scene in anime, magical girl animes, where they transform into like superheroes,
yep,
but for swords, into hunky dudes that you can date. It sounds ridiculous, and I backed this on Kickstarter a while ago.
I was about to say, isn't this in like early access or something? Or like, I believe
there may be some early access for Kickstarter backers. I haven't touched. I'm actually trying to avoid looking at more stuff because I know I'm going to play it.
No spoilers.
There's two things that have me excited about this game. One, the animations are absolutely awesome. Like literally just Google boyfriend dungeon transformation and you'll find GIFs of some really great transformations of people into swords and vice versa. If you're not into dating hunky dudes, there's also women you can date. There's a cat if you don't really want to date at all and just want to have a good friend. But the idea of creating a dating sim and a dungeon crawler where your relationship with your sim and the skill level of and the abilities of that sword in battle, in my mind, they just kind of make sense. Like, it's almost surprising it doesn't already exist. Yes. And I guess the closest thing we have, I guess, is like Transistor, you know, where like Red Sword is a hunky dude. There's no denying that.
In the romantic sword genre.
Right. I mean, Transistor is a progenitor to the boyfriend dungeon. We knew this would come once we played Transistor. I'm excited. I think that's going to be a cool little indie game.
It's cool that it's getting, I don't know why, maybe it's just in our little world or whatever, but it seems to be getting like so much buzz. It's exciting to see something, a weird game like that.
I think it cracked that like had a full boyfriend dating sim glass ceiling that only a few dating sims have managed to get out of.
Okay, let's see. What else is on my list here? Okay, this is a quick one. What do we know about Babylon's Fall?
Oh, I know almost nothing about that.
Okay, all I know is that it's a platinum game, but also a, what's his face? Dark Souls.
Oh, Hidetaki Miyazaki?
Yes. So that's why I put it on my list. I was like, okay, here we go. I saw like, you know, the E3 trailer or something like that.
Well, I mean, while we're at it then, like Elden Ring, which is Hidetaki Miyazaki, FromSoft, and George R.R. Martin.
Oh, maybe that's when I was getting it confused by. Oh, is that what you
were confused by? Yeah. Well, okay. So I do know something about it. I have a quote from Hidetaki Miyazaki about it. It says, Elden Ring is the name given to a mysterious concept that defines the world itself.
Oh, clear.
That makes sense. Okay, bud, sure. I'm on board. Here's the thing. Does it fucking matter what this game is about? You know, like, one, it's FromSoft and Miyazaki. I'm going to play it.
Yeah, we're there.
Two, well, I guess this is actually pro or con. This is what George R. R. Martin is doing instead of writing the next fucking Game of Thrones novel. So I feel like I might as well take a look at what's going on over there, you know? So.
Yeah, I mean, what do you think? He's writing? No, he's making video games.
I mean, he's got to be consulting on this even. Like, I doubt that he's even doing that much work on Elden Ring, you know? Like, he sold his name for, like, you know, a tankard of mead, and then he's just, like, chilling with his LARPing friends and stuff.
Okay, so speaking of high fantasy, or actually maybe it's just fantasy in general, have you followed Hades, the supergiant game that's been in early access?
So I think I ended up buying it, and I didn't, or no, you know what, I think I tried the free trial very early after it was first announced, and it didn't grip me. It felt like there was a lot of work to do,
right?
And at this point, I just didn't really want to pay any more attention, because I think I'll probably play it once it's fully out.
Yeah.
What do you know? I mean, is it good?
I mean, they released it so early. I mean, not released it, but they offered early access so early. Like, it was, I feel like it was this entire year it was available for the general populace to play early access.
Wasn't it at last E3 or shortly around that window, right?
It was something around, something like that. And, I mean, and the stuff that I've seen looks kind of cool, because it does, I mean, it's a roguelike action game that looks a lot more like Bastion looked, but has more roguelike elements to it, which I think Bastion still is their strongest game. And so it's cool to see them perhaps go back to some of those mechanics, but have different metagame mechanics on top of it.
Yeah.
And I think, like, generally speaking, all of their games are super interesting, even though I didn't like, Pyre. I want to go back to it, because I think that loop is really cool if they implement some of that Bastion style feel with the run based games.
Yeah, I wonder if it's worth checking out now, I don't know. But then, you know, if it's not done, it's not done. I don't know. I go back
and forth. It's so weird because, like, Supergiant Games, like, if there's one thing that I think about Supergiant Games is that polished. They're just extreme.
Yeah.
Even the games that I don't like, they are so finely made that you just can't really see the seams in them. And so I don't really know if I want to see the seams in them. You know, maybe I just want to have the
But then on the product. Other side, I'm like, do I need to financially support them to get them through
right.
and get to that polish? Because I don't think Pyre was the critical success that they had hoped.
So, I mean, they're still putting Bastion on everything with a screen, I mean, so they're probably doing okay.
In fact, one more Supergiant shout-out. NoClip just released a 35-minute documentary about the making of Transistor.
Oh,
came out
cool.
like 2 days ago. Super interesting. Highly recommend you check it out.
I love Transistor. I mean, Transistor was much more of a divisive game, I feel like, but I was just today, I was listening to the Transistor soundtrack, which is I regularly do.
Yep.
And I really like that game quite a bit.
Agreed. Okay, I will name another indie game that I was really surprised by. I actually only watched this trailer today in preparation for this, in case I had missed something. And that's Senua Saga Hellblade 2.
Okay, how wild is this? And by the way, I think Microsoft bought this company.
Ninja Theory? I mean, first off, they should, right? Like, the game came out and I was like, someone, please. Like, it's like, you know, they're like a craftsman of some fine ancient blade, like right. someone needs to pick them up,
right?
You know,
I mean, it's remember, I mean, that was both of ours, that was one of our favorite games of the year when it came out.
And I've been replaying it before I saw this news, and it's great, it's still great. I love it.
It's so shocking that I don't know. I mean, maybe I shouldn't be surprised by it, but it's so surprising that they are making a direct sequel to it. It felt like such a specific story. Yeah. You know?
I mean, see, that's my biggest concern, right? Mm. Is it was a success. It was widely praised, critically speaking.
Yeah.
And it was gorgeous looking. My concern is that there's a bit of a pressure of like, hey, you've been picked up. You need to have another critical hit.
Right.
Well, let's just ride this wave
right.
and make a sequel to, in what I think is a game that's pretty perfect as is. I do not think it needed a sequel. Now, my hope is this is like Fleabag season 2, where it's like it justifies itself. I have faith and I will try it. But I don't know if you saw the trailer, but it is fucking buck wild. It's got some spoopy singing and like a big monster. I don't know what the hell is going on. I had hoped Senua had like figured her shit out, you know, clearly she's still having a hard time. So I don't know. I just really don't want it to undermine the story of the previous game. And it just doesn't feel necessary.
Yeah. I mean, I wonder if they will take a different angle where such a big part of that first game was her internal monologue and her internal visions. And so I wonder if they'll take a different, you know, how else can we explore some sort of psychological aspect of humanity in a different way, you know, that, you know, it'll thematically, it will be similar in that it'll be just as much of an introspective game as someone battling, you know, a foe from the outside, but maybe they'll explore something different, you know, which I think would be cool to have these more, you know, instead of grief or fear, we're going to explore anger now or something like that.
That's true. That could be good.
You know?
Yeah.
Okay. So, Speaking of things that don't need a sequel but maybe are getting one, how do we feel about The Last of Us Part 2?
I mean, I'm excited for it.
I was not excited until I played Uncharted 4, and then I was like, all right, you got me again, Naughty Dog.
I mean, I'm right there with you, because I think we've said on the podcast before, the mechanics of that game are woefully underrated. It's the best work Naughty Dog has done, I think.
Period.
Mechanically. Yeah, period. Yeah. Hands down.
Yeah.
I think that the DLC for The Last of Us that focused on Ellie and I forget her other name, but the relationship with the other,
it was her friend, right?
Yeah, her that piece of DLC is really strong, and it stands alone independent of The Last of Us and adds a sense of getting to know who Ellie is a little bit more based upon what we've seen from trailers. The first one, which didn't really feature Ellie all that much at all anyway, makes me optimistic that if this is treated as its own independent piece of narratives, then maybe it's okay. And it won't feel as though we're treading old ground again.
Right. I mean, that world is interesting. Those characters are interesting. I think the writing and acting of that game was by far the best part of that game. But then Uncharted 4 proved to me that you could actually have a really compelling game in that engine with those types of mechanics.
Yeah.
And now all of a sudden it's like, oh, well, like, I wonder how much of that stuff will be repurposed into Last of Us 2, which made me more excited for it.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think we'll be swinging on ropes and doing like air punches and stuff, but I don't know. Maybe. Sure. Man, what else? There's so many. Okay, how about another game from a studio we both really like, and it's been a while, and that is Deathloop from Arkane Studios.
Oh, yeah. I know very little about this game, so I think it seems very exciting.
Of all the games you've mentioned so far, I think this is the most likely to be delayed out of 2020. The only thing we've seen is a CGI trailer in which two characters are killing each other over and over and over again, Groundhog style.
Right.
I don't know whether or not that trailer is actually indicative of what the mechanics of this game will be like. But what I will say is I have a lot of faith in Arkane Studio. I think the work that they did with the, specifically the time travel storyline inside the mansion in Dishonored 2 was probably one of my favorite missions in a game in the past like 5 years. I think that is so well done. If they take some of those lessons and apply them and like they play around with time travel in an interesting way, I'm totally on board.
Yeah. I mean, just they're the standard bearers for the immersive sim genre. I mean, it's who else besides them? Like, I mean, they from Dishonored to, what was the one that came out a couple years ago? Prey? Did they put it? I mean, it's just they're the ones that are still doing those types of games and not just as a retro throwback or whatever. They're still great games. I mean, the Dishonored games are some of my favorite games. So it's super exciting to see something that is. It's also a big departure from some of those other types of games. Totally. Like this does not look like Thief. So I mean, it's cool to see that.
And it's its own world, right? It feels almost like 1950s Harlem or something. It's very, you know, has a cool little aesthetic, at least to that trailer. We'll see about the actual game. Before we move on too fast, though, while on the Groundhog's Day theme, do you have interest in 12 Minutes?
I don't know about this game. What is this game?
So this game, I think we talked about it at E3 last year when the first trailer was revealed. This is from Nomada, the folks who did Greece.
Okay.
And this is the top-down thriller that is literally you play in 12-minute segments, and it's Groundhog's Day. Like the trailer basically has a woman talking to her husband, and reveals he's been reliving the day, and there's this urgent thing, and some guy breaks into the door, and there's this like weird horror stuff going on with home intrusion, and it repeats over, and he dies and repeats, and he dies and repeats. Yep. So, you know, we have seen Groundhog's Day repeated in things like Live, Die, Repeat, or Happy Death Day 1 and 2, the films. We haven't seen it plumbed all that much in video games. Or even,
just last year, the Outer Wilds was like...
Oh, that's true. Yeah, Outer Wilds, great example, actually. I guess we have seen it in video games.
Yeah.
I think taking a narrative take on that in an indie title, and then in the same year have something like Deathloop, which is basically the same idea, super funny, and I think that'll be interesting.
Yeah. Let's see, what else here? Oh, apparently, I don't know if this game's... I mean, this is one of those other games that might may or may not come out, but No More Heroes 3 is actually supposed to come out at some point. And especially after I played Travis Strikes Back, where it was just kind of a... It was more of a cruel game than anything because it was not a good game. It just made me really want to play a full-on No More Heroes game. Yeah. And it teased No More Heroes 3 throughout the entire game, like making fun the player for playing this because like, hey, I bet you wish you were playing No More Heroes 3. Well, like Suda's working on it. Like just straight up like trolling people. And I was like, man, fuck you. I really want to play No More Heroes 3.
Is that a game that could just come out whenever though? Like could they just be like, hey, game's out
tomorrow. True. They could probably just ship it where it's like...
Yeah.
I wonder if... I don't know if it is a Switch exclusive, but if they're able to, they could do a lot of wacky things with the Joy-Cons.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, man, yes. Sign me up. Ring Fit Adventure.
I mean, I would not be at all surprised if something like that would happen on it.
All right, I'm gonna name two more games, but really it's just because I want to kick off the conversation about what you think of them.
Yep.
Overwatch 2.
Oh, my God.
What do you think? I mean, are you interested at all?
I mean, I don't understand. I was actually reading a little bit about this, and I can't understand why. We both played a
lot of Overwatch.
I mean, I Overwatch is a good game. I mean, I'm not taking anything away from it. I just don't understand. I can't find the angle. Like, why put out Overwatch 2? I mean, it is essentially a live game. I don't know. It seems weird. Why? I mean, is it just to get something on store shelves and like bump up the sales? Because they were saying that it's the same. You know, they're not going to like block off characters from the old game, right? So, like, what exactly is Overwatch 2 then?
They announced a couple new modes.
Yeah.
I mean, it has to be built off of the same system.
Yeah.
I mean,
because they're not going to like jettison that entire, player base.
It's just the landscape of multiplayer games has changed pretty dramatically since Overwatch came out.
It is crazy to think about how fast that changed, where Overwatch 2 was super popular and then Battle Royales happened and now everything looks different.
Right. And so I think bumping it might literally just be what they need, you know?
Right. To get it back in front of people. I mean, I have fallen off of Overwatch. I haven't played, I haven't played the hamster. I haven't played a lot of those. I don't know. I mean, and that's not to say that I think the game is bad or anything. I love that game. It's just I couldn't keep up with it at a certain point, and I haven't been back for a while. But maybe that's the other thing. If you put out something that says Overwatch 2, you get the lapsed players back.
Yeah.
I don't know. What do you think? Are you excited about part 2?
I mean, I'm right there with you where it feels like if this comes out and there's enough new things, I'll almost certainly play it, if for no other reason than that's when everyone comes back. You know, it's the moment when the playing field is equalized again and we all get to experience it for the first time. It's the same reason that every year when there's a new World of Warcraft game that comes out, despite not having played it in years, I'm extremely tempted to play it because it's a sort of community return to it. I think Overwatch 2 presents that in a way that they haven't had in the sort of slow trickling of content that a live game generally produces. So, I don't know. I mean, I'm a little bit excited, so we'll see.
It is so weird. And I mean, all of this, it got popular before, Blizzard became a dumpster fire. I mean, it's just the world looks different now than when Overwatch first came out. So it will be cool to see what they do with it, even though I'm still a little bit confused by it.
Yeah. And then the one other one, I was curious to see if you were as potentially excited about this game as I am, and that's Microsoft Flight Simulator.
Oh, man. It seems like they're doing so much with this game.
I think that we're in a point where graphical fidelity is so strong that taking time out to relax and just fly over the beautiful countryside of Northern California seems extremely satisfying.
Yes.
In a way, it is an opportunity to market and talk about this game that flight sims just haven't had because they have been in the realm of the Uber nerd, of people who just want to like pretend that they're actual pilots. But the way that trailer released around E3 was more like, look at the gorgeous views you can have outside of your window,
Yeah.
That seems pretty cool.
Meditative flying.
I mean, is it really that dissimilar to people playing Assassin's Creed so they can roam the cities of, the world and explore Rome on foot? I don't think so.
There is a somewhat of a, virtual tourism dynamic to it. And I mean, I haven't read about this, but I imagine this would support some sort of VR, right?
Oh, I mean, in 2020 is the year of VR, as we've established.
I remember reading an article about people that played flight sims, but they were air traffic controllers.
Yes, I have read that article as well. It's very good. Oh my
God. It just opened up a whole new world of humans are just amazing. Where it's like, oh, this is not only am I simulating the airplane, I also have to simulate the people that direct the airplanes.
And the level of support that people provide to others as they get into this extremely niche community, it boggles my mind. And honestly, it inspires me to know that there are these communities that are so extremely niche, but also so welcoming to newcomers that they can keep themselves alive year over year. It's astonishing. It's like the Shakers or something, you know, like how does a small community that's against copulation continue to survive? I mean, maybe Shakers are dying off in a way that Flight Sim players are not, but you know, there you have it.
I mean, when was Microsoft Flight Simulator first released? Early 90s?
It has to be early 90s, right? When it's just like basic fields of green below you and nothing else, you know? And now you could fly like a tiny little Cessna through, you know, the Golden Gate Bridge.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and that, I wonder if they'll do something with, because I mean, one of the big pushes this year is Microsoft is going to bring its cloud gaming services to market in a more meaningful way. I wonder if that, it seems like Flight Simulator is a type of game that would really benefit from Microsoft's ability to just do huge amounts of cloud computing.
Yep.
Because they could simulate so many things and so many people doing different things all at the same time. It's not a very, you know, it's not a fighting game like a Twitch style thing. So it's okay if there's like a jitter here or there, but just the massive scale that they could produce just seems like it could be so cool.
I mean, you know what I would do? I would put this in as many Project S bundles as you can, as you possibly could, especially because we're in a console cycle where 4K is now the norm. Like there are a lot of homes with sizable 4K televisions because they've been cheaper than ever since the previous console life cycle. If you want to show off how gorgeously rendered your game can be, and specifically photorealistic, this is actually a pretty good game to just give away because the vast majority of people who try it out because they bought a new Xbox would not have bought Flight Simulator anyway. You know, they were not going to try it. And now you have basically a great showcase.
I mean, I think that's it. It's also probably a strong argument for their, what do they call it? Game Pass, for their Game Pass service, which with every month that we get closer to new consoles, I look at the Game Pass deal more and more seriously because I just look at all of the games and the type of, the way that they're approaching this. I mean, I don't know. The more I read about it and the more I look at every company doing its own offerings, it seems like Microsoft by far has the most cohesive, compelling story around what video gaming looks like in 2020.
Yep.
And Game Pass is a big part of that. And their like cloud option as an option versus a Stadia-like thing just makes so much more sense from where we are. And their crossover with the PC gives them this huge leg up on what Sony and Nintendo are doing. It just, I don't know, it just seems they're just being really smart about a lot of things. And I think Flight Simulator could secretly be kind of a Trojan horse for a lot of that stuff.
You could say it'll really take off.
They'll be cruising.
In flight.
All right, last thing, because we can't end this show without talking about Final Fantasy VII Remake.
Oh, I thought you were going to say Spelunky 2.
Oh, shit. I forgot about that.
Oh, there's two things we can't end with.
I mean, Spelunky 2 is a lock, right? I remember how...
Yeah, it speaks for itself.
Yeah, it just seems like... Is there a specific date on that? I know when he made the announcement, it was just 2020.
I don't think so. I didn't see one. Yeah.
I mean, that's fine. It's one of those things where... take as much time as you want. You already made a perfect game. What are you going to do? Make a second perfect game? I mean...
Yes. That's exactly right. That's my hope.
Go for it, you know? Yeah. I remember seeing that trailer and legitimately getting emotional while watching the Spelunky 2 trailer was just like, I had to look at myself as a third party and just kind of laugh at myself getting emotional about the Spelunky 2 trailer.
Yeah, for sure. Anyway, Final Fantasy VII, delayed till April, I think.
Yes, yeah. It was like a quick one of those quick little delays that's so much in style these days.
Yeah. I mean, I'm all for it, you know? Like I think based upon what we've been talking about, I don't think they can really afford to bungle this one. No. And based upon our conversation and massive debut for Final Fantasy VII, which any of you can listen now on experiencepoints.net, we don't think Final Fantasy VII is all that good. So if you're going to...
It was good in 1997.
It was. But if you're going to bring people in the year of our Lord 2020, then you got to make sure that it makes a splash. And if you need a month to polish off some rough edges, take your time.
It's weird that it will still... That and Cyberpunk will be two of the bigger games that I will play in the year. Because the beginning of the year is pretty quiet, and then all of a sudden these two big games come out that I'm both kind of nervous about playing.
Yep, for sure. Let me ask you this before we wrap up.
Yeah.
Do you think that your game of the year is going to be one of the games that we've talked about today, or do you think it will come out of left field and be announced at E3?
It's a good question.
You know, because I think contenders, The Last of Us 2, maybe? Yep. Cyberpunk, maybe?
I think Cyberpunk,
Spunky 2,
I
mean, for sure.
We didn't talk about it, but Doom Eternal is supposed to come out.
Yeah, Doom Eternal,
I don't know.
Maybe Halo Infinite will be great.
Yeah, we didn't talk about that at all, but I'm excited about that. I mean, it's been a while since a Halo game. I don't know. To me, it is way more wide open this year. There's just more unknowns for me. So I think that, I mean, I don't really have a, I don't know if my number one is what we've talked about, but I could easily see something like, oh, all of a sudden this is the year I get obsessed with Animal Crossing.
Yeah, for sure.
You know,
or there's a new, you know, a new title announced at E3 that's launching with the new consoles that Sony hasn't done the sort of press conference that everyone expects them to do when they're announcing their next console. I imagine they're holding at least a few games that are going to be big ones close to the chest, in addition to, you know, Ghosts of Tsushima and things like that. I mean, I could easily see something coming out of the blue and making our list. Because at the end of 2019, I don't think I would have predicted really any of those to be high on the best games of the year list.
Right. What do you think for yourself?
I mean, I think The Last of Us 2 is a good contender, knowing Naughty Dog's pedigree, the added time that they've taken to add some polish. There's all this side benefit of that, because it gives more time not just to the team that are working on the mechanical polish, but the writers.
Yep.
You know, they can polish up any voice acting, they can polish up any music, you know, troubleshoot some like minor little issues, polish up some UI, do some more user testing. Like, there's just a lot of opportunities that delays can create for a studio, and I think that the time that they've taken makes me more optimistic, not less. It's not like they said, we're delaying the game, and also we lost half our team to exits.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, it's not like a BioWare scenario. I think of all of the games, besides Spelunky 2, which I think has a very real chance.
Yes.
I think The Last of Us 2 is probably the most likely to be notable. Yeah. I didn't mention Hollow Knight. There's a new Hollow Knight game, Silksong. I really enjoyed Hollow Knight more than I thought I would, and I played it the year after it came out, so it never made my best game of the year list. I will play this one day and date, and I think there's a very real chance that's high on my list as well.
Yep.
And then depending if Miyazaki learned anything from the last game, I think Elden Ring, I mean, who knows? It doesn't seem like they've been working on it all that long, but maybe. Right.
Yeah, it's, and to your point, you know, not to mention any of the secret, you know, third and fourth quarter style releases that they'll do because of the new consoles.
Yep.
It's also, there are just dark horses within these games where,
for sure,
you know, Last of Us 2, I remember The Last of Us had a pretty good multiplayer mode.
Yeah, that's a very good point.
It's like, who knows what's in The Last of Us 2? I mean, there could be some sort of like new crazy multiplayer that's also really good. So there's just a lot of unknowns even within these games. You know, what I think Senua has a pretty good chance of being talked about by us at the end of the year, depending on what goes on there. I mean,
and on that subject of sleeper hits within these picks, something like Ghosts of Tsushima, like that, Sucker Punch hasn't made a game since Infamous First Light in 2014. Yep. I mean, it'll have been 6 years since the game came out. Who knows? You know, it looks solid. It looks like it'd be good. I really enjoyed those last two Infamous games. So I think that there's a lot of potential there from that studio having a sleeper hit also.
Yeah, agreed. I mean, I think, like I said, at the end of the year, both of us will most likely have new console hardware in our houses. So
Plus VR, finally. I mean,
finally, yes. it will be a big transitional year that I think there will just be some surprises. So it's kind of cool going into a year that's hard to predict because of that.
Yeah.
And it's exciting to have this time to like finish up some of the last year's stuff, and then come March, like, things start heating up pretty quick.
Yeah. Well, what's first, I guess, Animal Crossing, Persona 5 Royale, right? Those are like the two.
Yeah. I mean, I think so. Like, I think Animal Crossing is like mid-March or something.
Yeah. All right.
Cool. Well, we'll leave it there, and we'll open it up to to you all's most anticipated games for 2020, experiencepoints@gmail.com is our email address.
And experiencepoints.net is where you can get all of this year's upcoming sweet, sweet content. Come on by, bring your friends. Happy New Year again.
Yep. All right, everyone. Thank you so much for listening. We will talk to you next week.
Ciao.